COVID-19 webinar series that we've been holding with the main intention of sharing updates on COVID-19 and providing our member associations with different guidance to help them cope with these times of the crisis. Today's webinar is going to look at the COVID-19 dashboard. It's basically our response to the outbreak. And we have three key panelists that will take us through this presentation. We will hear from Kat Fuller, from Estelle Platt, and also from Kartik. And like our other previous webinars, this is more not looking really at kind of the technical and the program elements. So we're looking forward to having discussions with you at the end. So feel free to raise your questions in the Q&A as the presentations go on, and then we'll open to discussions at the end. So to get us started, I'd like to welcome our first presenter, who is Kartik. Kartik is likely well known to all of you who are attending this session. He is our medical advisor and has been chairing and leading the COVID-19 task force that is the platform that's guiding the organization's response. So I'd like to welcome Kartik to get started. Thank you, Kartik.
Thank you, Sarah. And thanks for giving the opportunity for us to actually present, make this webinar in the work you're leading for the Federation on communicating and keeping our MAs engaged on this. I hope everyone can see the screen and the slides. Yeah. So I'll start off, and I want to say that, as Sarah highlighted, the objective of this webinar is to have a conversation with our member associations and see how we can continue to be engaged. Also feedback to them of how the very rich information that they've provided with us through the different channels has been used in shaping the overall IPPF response. So I'll start with setting the context and the background and then hand over to my colleagues Kat and Estelle to walk us through the dashboard and how we are using it. So give me a minute. I'm just trying to figure out how to move the slide. Yeah, great. So as all of you are experiencing in the front lines, COVID-19 has created an enormous strain on us as individuals, but more importantly for all of you as institutional leaders and institutions working in countries to deliver SRH services and defend and advance rights for our communities. We're also seeing that this challenge is affecting our most vulnerable and marginalized populations, women and girls specifically, but also other groups such as individuals with disabilities, LGBT populations, refugees, IDPs, and others as well. And I think one of the big learnings over the last 3-4 months for us have been the fact that it's a dual risk for us, that the risk of actually COVID-19 transmission and contracting COVID-19, but also the measures that have been put in place by the various governments and authorities in terms of how they want to address the epidemic, has resulted in our SRHR programs being significantly affected by at the member association level. And it has also had a large impact on the finances and the operations of the member association. As all of you have told us, we are definitely seeing a shift in the focus that is disrupting, deprioritizing, and decreasing the provision of SRH services in our communities. And it's also leading to a situation where we are having to deal with increased cost and potentially decreased incomes, which is affecting the ability of our member associations to operate. So you've also had an opportunity to engage with the Secretariat through the two rounds of survey, the first one being towards the end of March and the second towards the end of May. And we've used that data as a cornerstone for all of the actions and the priorities that IPPF has focused in supporting our member associations. So as you can see, we at the Secretariat have been tracking this outbreak since January. And in early January and February, I think the focus was to make sure that we are providing role and context specific guidance. So depending on which regions were more affected in January and February, the nature of impact that we were beginning to see. So we were providing very specific advice and guidance to our member associations in the beginning. But once on March 11th, when WHO declared this to be a pandemic, and it was very clear that we were going to have continued transmission and risks appearing across the world, IPPF's leadership, the DLT, decided that we needed a large, a coordinating mechanism that would allow for our response and support to our member associations to be fit for purpose and proportionate. And they requested the formation of an IPPF COVID-19 task force. Just to give a brief background, this COVID-19 task force is comprised of about 15 members drawn from different parts of the secretariat. So it includes individuals with a range of expertise, a range of domain skills and hardcore skills that they bring in terms of business continuity planning, humanitarian experiences, technical skills, financial skills, commodities, communication, advocacy, resource mobilization. So together we put together this 15-member task force that I chair, and we started becoming the nerve center and coordinating mechanism to make sure that whatever IPPF does is coordinated to an optimum level and continues to have focus on how we can support our member associations. In order to make sure that our actions were prioritized and evidence-based, we ran the first global assessment, which 122 member associations actually completed between March 28th and 1st of April. We used that data, we analyzed the data to identify what are the key priorities, and we agreed on what could be our response mechanisms for the first 6 weeks between 5th of April and May 15th. And by the middle of May, we realized that the pandemic had also changed and the nature of the challenge had also evolved for our member associations in the 6 weeks. And we felt it was necessary for us to do another round of survey to get a more updated situational analysis that would then allow us to decide what are the priorities we should focus on as IPPF, as a secretariat, and as a federation, and how we can implement that. So in order to achieve that, we did the second round of survey, where we again, thanks to all of you, saw excellent engagement, and 124 member associations completed the survey. And we are using that the results of the survey to both inform our donors and say what are the priorities they should be investing in, and also realigning our internal efforts to make sure that IPPF's support is responsive to what MAs have indicated in the surveys. And that is what is informing our action plans as we move forward from early June onwards. In short, I wanted to just give a summary of what are we seeing globally as the threat to SRHR and the threat to IPPF's operations across the different regions. As you can see, the top line message for us is to say that the SRHR ecosystem, the structures, the processes, the systems, the human resource, and the institutions that all work towards recognizing a rights-based agenda for sexual and reproductive health is under significant strain. And we are seeing the strain across these five domains that I've outlined in the outer circle here. One is we are seeing a decreased access to SRH services. Two, we are seeing a decrease in the availability of SRH services, the ability of MAs to actually offer these services. Third, we are seeing the loss of skilled workforce. So not just our staff who know how to do an abortion or how to provide an IUD insertion or insert and remove an implant, but we are talking about individuals in whom we have worked very closely to build a rights-based understanding who can offer these services with great dignity to a lot of vulnerable individuals with a range of specific requirements. And that loss of skilled workforce is a big challenge for us as well that we have identified. We're also seeing commodity stockouts, both for personal protective equipment and for SRH commodities that are beginning to affect different MAs at different levels. And we are finally seeing a big shift in how governments and other power structures in our communities continue to engage with the civil society. And we feel that the erosion of, or the changes that we're seeing on these five domains are critical and will affect the SRHR ecosystem overall that IPPF strives to maintain and grow. So based on all this data that we collected in the first round and the second round, we needed to get a very sharp messaging that is used to engage our donors and our key stakeholders to make sure that the right issues get the visibility and we're able to focus and generate resources to support that. So as a result, what the task force has come up with is to say that the overall IPPF response to COVID-19 is to ensure that we have a resilient SRHR ecosystem. And the way we can achieve that is by working on these three pillars. The first pillar is to ensure that we continue our SRHR programs. So that includes service, clinical services, it includes CSC, it includes all the other work that we do to ensure access to information and services for SRH continues to be available for our communities. The second pillar that we want to work is IPPF member associations' roles as SRHR advocates. How can we protect, how can we promote and advance SRHR as responsible advocates in our communities, in our countries? That was the second pillar of our work. And the third pillar is more internal looking, but very critical to the success of the previous two pillars, is to say, how can we use this as an opportunity, the massive disruption that COVID-19 has caused, to say, how can we reimagine and ensure that our member associations emerge out of this as resilient organizations and strong civil society that continues to fight and advocate and promote SRH services in their communities. So we structured and identified that these would be our three pillars, and all efforts that IPPF attempts in order to respond to COVID-19 will be structured and coordinated under this framework. And we also said that we would leverage all resources, whether it is at the global level, regional level, national level, or subnational level, to make sure that we are able to deliver on this framework. As you see, one of the things that we decided very early on is to make sure that we have a good system of communication to make sure that we hear from our member associations what are the challenges, and also relay back to them and report back to them as to what action we have taken from the information that has been provided to us. So in order to achieve that, we set up two dedicated platforms. The first one that you see on the left, which is a microsite, is a dedicated website where we are continuing to post all the updates and outputs that are generated from the COVID-19 task force, member associations, and the secretariat at large. This is an open to everyone website, so you can access it on your phone, tabs, and computers. And this has information on how you can continue to engage with IPPF and provide updates, share some of the great work that you're doing, and the innovative approaches of how you've become more resilient and how you've adapted to the challenges. And we are constantly seeking to update the content that is present on the website. So please do share with us, visit the website and share with us any information that you think would be useful for the rest of the Federation as well. On the right side, what you're seeing is a slightly different approach, but it's also an opportunity to engage, get inspired, and share innovation. So we've created a dedicated discussion platform for which you will need to register. So this is a closed group for only IPPF, for the IPPF family. So it includes everyone from, you know, frontline workers, volunteers, branch staff, MA headquarters staff, secretariat staff at the regions, at central office, all of them who are associated with IPPF to register on the site. And on, as you will see on the left of this, you'll see a number of channels by topic where you can actually engage in real-time and near-time conversations with other member association staff, share your challenges, share your innovative ideas, inspire others, and get inspired from other member associations as well. We want to say that these are two critical platforms where you can continue to engage and provide feedback and ideas and inputs to the IPPF overall response, and we would request you, details are available on the website, so we'll request you to visit this, encourage other members of your team to visit and register as well. And finally, to just summarize, for as a result of all the conversations and all the engagement that we have had with IPPF, I wanted to say that we were intentional in saying that open, transparent communication and reporting back to our member associations as to what we have done with the data and information we've given has been a priority for the task force. So thanks to your fantastic inputs from the two rounds of survey, the weekly webinars, the website, and the discussion platform, we have collected a lot of rich information that we are using to define our response. And in terms of what we have actually done with that information, you can see on the next two panels, we've been able to support over 100 member associations through a variety of support mechanisms. The first decision that DLT made was to say, we should advance the second tranche of the core funding for our MAs to ensure that they have access to liquidity. And we've been able to do that, and that has supported over 75 MAs. The second thing is donors were very, understanding of the challenges that our MAs are going through, and many donors have agreed to reallocate their programs to allow for a COVID-19 response at the ground level. So we reallocated existing projects and their funds to be more COVID-19 sensitive and reactive, and that supported 31 member associations. The humanitarian team got off on a flying start and was able to raise funds quickly, additional funds quickly for our member associations to support the COVID-19 response. Through that, we have now been able to support over 10 member associations. Our global and regional teams have also worked very closely with UNFPA and RHSC to ensure that we can get access to SRH commodities as donations that can enable our member associations to continue providing support. So we are seeing 22 member associations benefiting from an SRH commodity donation. The DGERF emergency relief funds was also used to do an emergency procurement of personal protective equipment that is now being supplied to 36 member associations. And as a result of all these efforts, the total value of IPPF's COVID-19 response so far is approximately $19 million. We've been able to use existing funds and advance them to the tune of $7.9 million, which is our core funding. $1.7 million from restricted projects have been reallocated. We have raised now an additional $3.7 million of funding that is dedicated to COVID-19 response. And we have commodity donations to the worth of $6.3 million. So in all, this is just an overall summary, and we will make sure that this is also shared at the microsite so you have an opportunity to know what's going on. But as I stop here and I transition to my colleagues, we want you to also have visibility into how the data has been used for us to achieve all of these outputs. So I'll now request my colleague Kat Fuller to walk us through a very important tool that has been critical for the task force in its work. Kat, over to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Karthik. And I think I have control to move the slides. You might have to do that for me. I'm not sure if I'm able to do that. But what Karthik has said essentially is he's talked about the MA survey and how that's been really critical to the coordination function of the task force. So what I'm going to do now is share some of that data and talk a little bit about how we've been able to use it for decision making. So Karthik, if you can just run through the bullets here. In terms of our approach to using the survey results, we wanted to contextualize, focus, and visualize the data, and we wanted to make the data accessible for decision making. So there are three things that we wanted to understand. We wanted to understand the impact of COVID-19 in country, the impact of COVID-19 on member associations, operations, and service delivery, and where support is or is not being provided. Next slide. So we created a dashboard, and this is the dashboard. And I know that it's not possible for you to read it at the moment. It's quite small, but that doesn't matter. In a few minutes, we're going to look at the data in some more detail, but I wanted to give you an idea of what it looks like. Next slide. So essentially the dashboard is a pivot table built into Excel, and you can drag and drop any variable from the different data sets that feed into it. And all data sets are linked to the variable country. We wanted to keep the dashboard simple, but with the pivot table functions, you can filter and sort in different ways to support the analysis of the data. Next slide. And what we can do is pull data from the dashboard into a map and create interactive visualizations. And we'll be looking at the data in this format quite a bit throughout the presentation. So on this map, ignore the red circles for the moment, and we'll talk about what those mean in a bit. But what you can see on this map is all of the countries where IPPF has a presence. So the darker blue countries are where there's a full IPPF member association, lighter blue is associate member, et cetera. So this is just to give you a bit of a picture. And at this stage, I also wanted to point out that we're going to be showing you screenshots throughout this presentation, as opposed to showing you the live dashboard. And this is because we just didn't want to risk any technical difficulties with the dashboard. One of our next steps is to publish the dashboard on the microsite and some of these visualizations. So you'll be able to go into the maps yourselves and look at the data in more detail and in an interactive way. So next slide, please. So where does the data come from? Next slide. Of course, we've taken data from the survey results. So we've collected key data that allows us to get a good picture of the impact of COVID-19 on MAs and how MAs are responding. But theoretically, we could pull all of the data if we wished from the surveys into here, or we could change up which specific data we'd like to look at. Next slide. And to understand the impact of COVID-19 in the country more widely, we wanted to look at external data. And we have three data sources to help us understand this. So the first is data coming from Worldometers. And this is a site that tells us the number of cases per country. To make the data as comparable as possible, we have pulled out the number of cases per 1 million people for each country. The second is the Inform Epidemic Risk Index. This assesses the risk of countries to epidemic outbreak. And the third is an organization that is collecting information about the measures that governments are taking in response to COVID-19. And we've just put the web links there for everyone. Next slide, please. And we've also collected data from other internal sources. So we've looked at our restricted projects to understand where reallocations have been made to support the COVID-19 response. And we have information about where we have supported, provided support through PPE procurements. And all of the data sources feeding into this dashboard, both external and internal, have been set up to be linked so they can be updated automatically. Next slide, please. So now we wanted to show you some examples of the data in more detail. For example, we can look at, next slide. This is the Worldometers data. So in this case, the darker the color of red, the greater number of cases per 1 million population. And next slide. On top of that data and that map, we can look at the number of service delivery points that have stopped providing services as reported through the round two MA survey results. On this map, the larger the green circle, the greater number of service delivery points that have stopped providing services. Next slide, please. We can also see where we have been able to support funding reallocations to restricted projects to support continued operations. So similarly for this slide, the larger the purple circle, the greater amount of restricted funding has been reallocated. And next slide, please. On this map, we can see the MAs that are facing stockouts. In this case, if the country is highlighted in green, the MA has reported stockouts of any kind. So we can see that this is a significant issue for IPPF globally. Where there are red circles, so these are the red circles I was talking about before, this is the Worldometers data, so the number of cases in the country. And the larger the size of the circle, the greater the number of cases. Next slide, please. On this map, we can see where opposition in country is responding to COVID-19. In this case, if the country is highlighted in orange, the MA has reported that the opposition is responding through the survey. Again, we can see that this is a significant issue for many countries and member associations. Next slide, please, and if you just run through the bullets, Karthik, thanks. So with the slides presented so far, we have just given a snapshot of the data, the questions that we have been asking, and some of the analysis that we've been able to do. But with the wealth of information provided, we have been able to make decisions and respond in a number of ways. And Karthik has already spoken to this a little bit, but more specifically, we've been able to prioritize PPE allocations to member associations. We've highlighted the SRH commodity situation to an FPA and WHO, and this has been critical for securing donations from UNFPA. We've been able to update specific commodity stockout information for deeper engagement and working towards solutions. We are mobilizing funding for member associations that are seeing significant impacts on their operations, including clinic closures and staff who have been terminated. And we are identifying and engaging with member associations on innovative approaches and supporting dissemination of learning to others. Next slide. We've also been able to highlight and demonstrate the MA response. So next slide, please. This map shows the MAs that are part of government-led or national committees on COVID-19. So this is represented by the purple dots. And again, we can see it's quite a few member associations. Next slide. And this map shows the MAs that have been supporting policy initiative or legislative changes since 2020. So this is actually just a snapshot of the globe, but we can see by the number of green dots that there are many MAs working on this. Next slide. So the data is also telling us that we need to continue to support. Next slide. For example, here we can see that many MAs will be facing severe cash flow challenges if the crisis continues for another 5 months. So those countries highlighted in dark yellow or sort of brown color is where the MAs have indicated severe impact through the second survey. And next slide. Here we can see that many MAs will also be facing severe impact with regards to staff being suspended or terminated if the crisis is to continue. And not surprisingly, many of these MAs are the same that have indicated severe impact on cash flow. Next slide, you can just run through the bullets again. So some of the things that we'd like you to take away from this presentation, I mean, COVID-19 is impacting all MAs and many are facing similar challenges as we can see from the data. The survey data has been critical in supporting IPPF's response. It has enabled evidence-based decision-making, federation-wide decision-making that's based on need. It provides transparency behind our decision making and provides a basis on which to build our understanding. And we hope that we are understanding the situation that MAs are facing. And if we aren't, we of course would like to hear from you. Next slide. So I'd like to extend a huge thank you for completing the surveys and hope that sort of with this information, you see the value of the data for IPPF's response. And just one last slide before we conclude, just to talk about going forward. We will continue to use the data and apply a triangulation approach to inform action and decision-making. We may be asking further questions to understand the situation better in country and for member associations. Your continued inputs are critical to ensure we can respond and support appropriately. And using the data, we're currently working on a number of things, and I've put a few here, but Karthik can add on. We are mapping the humanitarian and development service delivery aspect. We are mapping the delivery of innovative CSC programs across the maze. We are mapping government approval for telemedicine approaches and support action and supporting the advocacy agenda. So that sort of concludes my part of the presentation. And I'll hand back to Karthik if you'd like to add anything onto that before I think we're going to discussion and questions.
Thank you, Kat, for that. And I hope it was helpful for our audience to kind of appreciate how we've used the data to make decisions, how we've organized it, and how we are also making it available to them so that they can continue to see and identify which member associations they could reach out to for support as well. But before I, in addition to all of that, I think what I want to highlight is on behalf of IPPF, I also want to take the opportunity to thank and state that we are continuing to work in our MA's best interest. We want to make sure that we continue to engage with you in a meaningful way that allows for us to understand your challenges and help find innovative solutions. So the request is, please do visit the microsite. Please do register on the Slack discussion platform. Use them as tools to make sure we are able to support you and offer advice, counsel, or whatever you need in your COVID-19 response. We recognize that we are far from the end of this challenge for us. And it's important for us not to get fatigued by what we are facing, but feel that we are part of a larger family. We are in it together, and we will support each other to get through this. In addition, I also wanted to highlight that we are planning for another webinar where we will have an opportunity for leadership from certain member associations that have been able to kind of adapt and find innovative solutions to make their organizations more resilient, have a conversation with other senior leadership from member associations as well. So that could be another additional avenue for us to continue the dialogue of talking as civil society organizations in our countries to say, what can we do? How can we support each other better? And what are some practical ideas and innovative ideas that we can implement to make sure that we emerge out of this as a resilient and innovative organization? So I'll stop here and we'll open up for questions and discussion. One thing we would specifically welcome from our audience is to say, what can we do more to be responsive to your needs? Is there any feedback you would like to give us in terms of both the surveys, but also the other avenues that we have discussed today? So I'll stop here and take questions now. Sarah, are the questions coming in on? So we've got two questions. Kat, do you want to take them?
I think Estelle has helpfully answer them, but I will run through them. So the first one was around the SPD's question. So regarding the SPDs closed in country, did the size of the dots represent the number of SPDs closed per country or the proportion of SPDs closed? And Estelle said that it's the total number, not the proportion. And it includes all types of service delivery points. And we could do proportion because I believe we have the number of SPD sites included in our dashboard, which is from our sort of global data set. So that could be something I believe we could look at. Estelle, correct me if I'm wrong. And then from Elias, the question is around the opposition. What is the opposition response? How is it characterized? So the question in the survey was, how is the opposition in your country responding to COVID-19 with regards to SRHR? Please check all that apply. So we included every every response that said the opposition was responding in country. And Estelle has included the options that were in the question that could have been ticked.
Thank you, Kat. Also, just to add that Marta from Pro Familia Colombia has also added that regarding Estelle's question in Colombia on number two, which is regarding the SDP closures, she's indicated that it's changed probably now since the second survey as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And it's important for us to make sure that we can get updated info that's manageable for our MASG report. We know that you're under a lot of stress and there's so many competing priorities. So update us when you can, but it's not necessarily a requirement. And we are hoping that in a couple of weeks or months, we will probably think about another assessment when things have changed significantly to see what is the current situation and how can we then mount a more appropriate response as well. Yeah. I also see one of our attendees has their hand up. Please hold on for a few seconds. Let us just give you the floor. It is CO Institutional Delivery. Kat, would you be able to unmute them?
It looks like their hand went down.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know which one it was because there's that's actually okay. A few CO. Yeah,
that's
sorry.
Okay.
We have
a few more questions.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a question from Heidi Arak saying, when do you estimate that the dashboard will be searchable on the microsite?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're aiming for a few weeks. We still need to figure out the sort of technicalities around that. Estelle, do you have a more updated timeline?
So it took a bit of time to update the dashboard with the second round of the survey results. So we'll definitely try to have it online in July, but it's more the technical aspect of things, like how do you put a searchable an interactive map on the microsite. That's a bit challenging for the moment.
And if I may add to it, I think for secretariat members who have access to SharePoint, you will already have access to the dashboard to be able to run either project-specific or donor-specific queries for yourself. What we're trying to do is, given that the website is a public space where people beyond the IPPF family can potentially access this information, we want to make sure that the information we present is appropriate for a public audience, potentially public audience. And then the second technical challenge that Estelle is working to find solution is, how do we make it searchable and interactive rather than, you know, just as a static function? Yeah. We also have another question from Alice. Lots of countries changed the legislation on abortion and other SRHR services to make it accessible by teleconsultation, telemedicine during the lockdown. Is IPPF working on a strategy to help the MA in advocating for making those changes as laws? In general, are we working on an advocacy strategy on abortion following the lockdown, as it was one, the right who suffered the most of the COVID crisis? I'm happy to take this question, Kat and SL. Is that okay?
Please do.
Yeah. So the short answer, Alice, is yes. So we've identified that there are 50 countries, 50 member associations that reported that the national government has recognized SRH services as part of essential health services. We've also identified that out of this, in addition to this 50 countries, there are about 29 countries that have actually revised their national guidelines to remove barriers to access for SRH services. A vast majority of them, I think about 18 of them, predominantly focus on maternal health, contraceptive access, and safe abortion access. So we are right now putting together a summary document that we are circulating within the task force members, and they will reach out to the other regional colleagues as well in saying, how can we use this initial shift, the way that change has happened so quickly because of COVID-19, how do we consolidate this position? What are the things that we need to do to make sure that the victories that we have during this crisis continue to remain and become part of the new normal? In addition to working on policies and guidelines, we are also exploring opportunities to see how we can expedite registration for commodities, which can also be very critical. And we are also beginning to have some conversations around how do we train our staff to ensure that they are able to offer these telemedicine services and teleconsultation services as well. From Ian and Fabian from our advocacy group are part of the task force, and they work very closely with the Movement Accelerator group and the advocacy working group in IPPF, which includes a number of MAs, and they are working together to see how we can consolidate some of these wins into more, normative guidance going forward as well. Yeah, great. We have a few more questions. We have another question that says, don't you think the update should be more frequent since the pandemic is changing fast? Example, doubling of cases in many countries in the last 2 weeks. So this is a question from Elias. Elias, 100% agree with you, but I think it's been a very difficult conversation for us within the task force to balance our need to know information versus the burden it actually induces on our member associations to be able to provide this information. So we are using these surveys as kind of dipsticks, but our regional colleagues are in more, near-time conversation with our member associations that have indicated that they are going through a crisis or that they are in a very precarious situation more frequently. So we are using the survey only to get a collective global view, but that is not our exclusive mechanism to track how the situation is changing on the ground quite rapidly. We are aware that as the pandemic is beginning to drive towards the global south, so what we're seeing in Latin America, in the WHR region, in Africa, and in South Asia is quite concerning. And so our task force members from those regions are continuing to provide much more frequent updates as well. Yeah. We also have a question from Flas. How can the dashboard be trickled down to assist MAs with their tracking mechanisms? This is important for management purposes. That's a really good question. Estelle or Kat, do you want to start and then I can add on?
It's a really good question. I think perhaps at sort of the Member Association for Internal Management, a similar type of dashboard could be created with more detailed information, certainly built on top of the one that we've created, and maybe pulling in some of the data sources that we have that could be useful. That's one idea. Karthik, Estelle?
Yeah, if I may add to that, I think as a start, we think having this on the microsite will enable each of our MA leadership to actually go in and interact in an interactive manner, draw a more global conclusion for their organization. So we think that's a good start. You're right, we don't necessarily have a ready-made solution of how MAs can potentially replicate this within their organization. But this is where I would encourage you to speak to our regional colleagues, and maybe Estelle can say, at each of the regional offices, we do have a focal point who is helping kind of make sure that this dashboard is updated. And they would be someone who can help you kind of adapt the skeleton of this structure in a much more simplified manner for use at an MA level. The important thing we do want to highlight here is what data you put into the dashboard obviously then tells you how useful the dashboard will be for you. And that requires quite a bit of effort. So in thinking about wanting to use a dashboard for your at your MA level, that is a consideration that you also need to think about. Will you have the right kind of information, and how can you make sure you have adequate human resource that can ensure that this data is populated and the dashboard is kept alive for you to make meaningful conclusions? Yeah. Estelle, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I just want to say also that we call it a dashboard, but it's essentially a pivot table, and it's in Excel, it's not in Power BI. And when I decided to take on this work, I had no previous knowledge of very advanced Excel functions. There is no VBA coding involved, none of that. So I do think it's, first of all, it's customizable. And I think it's also pretty easily replicable, providing that I can demonstrate separately in another more technical session how I built this. But this is really not rocket science, and I believe anyone who is not afraid of working with Excel can achieve this result.
Thank you, Estelle. But if you're interested, we can make sure that we can flag this request to our regional colleagues, and they can potentially follow up and support you to see what could be a structure that would be useful for our member associations to use this as an internal management tool as well. Great. Any other questions, any feedback to us specifically as to what we could do better? Anything that you found was challenging or unclear that you'd want us to do differently going forward? Great. I don't see any further questions. I know we do have quite a bit of time, but maybe we can give a few more minutes to see if there are any other thoughts, questions before we wrap up. Just to also say that on Friday, we will have the same webinar presented in French for the benefit of our Francophone organizations. So that'll be another opportunity for you to also share your feedback and suggest ideas of how we could do this better as well. Great. If there are no further questions, Kat and Estelle, are you happy for me to close the
webinar?
I think
there's just one more come up, Karthik.
Okay, sorry.
In terms of CSC, you said the presentation that you are working on it to make it accessible. Can you give us more information on it? So in terms of the CSE work, maybe that's for you, Karthik, in terms of the task force.
Yeah. So we did ask specific questions on our youth programs and specifically CSE in the second round of survey. And that's one of the areas where we have seen incredible progress between the two rounds of survey. So of the 124 member associations that responded, 67 of them have indicated that they are currently using one of the digital platforms to deliver their CSC. In addition, many of our MAs are also using face-to-face CSC with social distancing, using online education platforms that have been developed by institutions to deliver regular education, and they've been able to embed CSC within that as well. So this is an area where we've also engaged very closely with our youth group. So all the youth focal points from the different regions and the secretariat have had access to this information, and they've used this information to identify what priorities and what support IPPF can provide in ensuring that we continue to deliver CSE and our other parts of our youth program. And I also wanted to highlight that we will put up the second round survey results on the microsite shortly after this call, after this webinar. And you will see some top line findings there, which you can also identify which countries are doing once the dashboard is up. Some of the innovative things that our MAs are doing is they're continuing to keep youth engaged during the lockdown. So they're seeing how they can be used for community support activities, you know, such as distributing food packages to vulnerable individuals, running online surveys, looking at their other needs to continue to stay engaged is a big priority for us. And I know a number of our restricted projects are now considering addressing other issues of mental health, access to services, and other challenges that are emerging as well. So quite a lot happening on the youth and CSE front. I would direct you to look at the survey results and play more with the dashboard once it's available. Yeah. Great. Do we have one more question? So we have someone from CO Institutional Delivery that said, I think it's important to engage MAs to have access to the data and provide feedback to the task force. Completely agree. And I think that's what we're trying to make sure that the data set is available on the microsite in July, as Estelle mentioned earlier. So we are able to kind of allow member associations to interact with the data as well. So we'll do that, definitely. Noted. Yeah. Great. If there are no further questions, thank you everyone for making the time. And I hope it was a useful session for you to understand how IPPF is using the inputs and the data that you're giving in driving our overall response. Please continue to stay engaged. Let us know what we can do better and how we can be more responsive to your needs. We would really, really appreciate that. And thank you for all the hard work you're doing. Stay well. Take care. Thanks, everyone.